All right, let me see if I can repeat those comments now. The reason he was a minute late was because he saw a football field-sized
crater.
Flight
Director Gene Kranz going around the
room. AOS 10327, AOS 10413, over. Thank you.
A large crater about the size of a football field or soccer field, meaning about 100 meters in diameter, was right in the touchdown flight path, and it was full of large boulders and rocks, and there were quite a few large boulders and rocks throughout the area, and he had to initiate what is called Program 66, which is a mode of pilot takeover to maneuver around over the rock field to find a decent area. That was Neil Armstrong's way of phrasing how he had to move the spacecraft laterally in order to find a smooth spot to set down. Buzz Aldrin said that...
We've just gotten a report from the telecom here in Mission Control that LEM systems look good after that landing. We're about 26 minutes now from loss of signal from the command module.
Buzz Aldrin reported every variety of shape and angularity of rock imaginable outside the window. Also, they
Tranquility
said...
Tranquility Base, Houston, all your consumables are solid. You're looking good in every respect. We copy the dips, venting. Everything is copacetic. Over.
Also, we heard from the astronauts on the moon.
Thank you, Houston.
The 1/6 gravity there was just like in airplanes. It felt quite comfortable. You heard Charlie Duke say there are a lot of smiling faces here in Mission Control and all over the world. Neil Armstrong piped in that there are two smiling faces up here too, and Mike Collins then came on the air with, and don't forget one in the command module also. Then Armstrong came back with, just keep that orbiting base ready up there, Mike. And Mike said, will do. The lunar module of Apollo 11 touched down on the moon on schedule. Took one extra minute to maneuver around a large field of rocks and boulders out of the way of a crater about 100 meters in diameter. It touched down at 102 hours, 45 minutes, 42 seconds after liftoff, according to the first information available. And man has landed on the moon.
Here's
Armstrong. Armstrong.
The guys that bet that we wouldn't be able to tell precisely where we are the winners today. We were a little busy worrying about program alarms and things like that in the part of the descent where we would normally be picking out our landing spot. And aside from a good look at several of the craters we came over in the final descent, I haven't been able to pick out the things on the horizon as a reference as yet.
Right, Tranquility, no sweat. We'll figure it out, over.
So Armstrong can't tell exactly where he is in that landing designated area because of the alarms coming on, the lights flashing in the spacecraft, and of the busy activity leading right up to the touchdown. He could not keep track of some of the landmarks in the area as he was making that final touchdown. Then, of course, he was busy maneuvering to a spot while hovering straight up and down, maneuvering to a spot that was not strewn with large rocks and boulders. As they say, every shape, variety, angularity that you can think of in this area. 103 hours and 3 minutes.
You might be interested to know that...
This is Armstrong.
I don't think we noticed any difficulty at all in adapting to 1/6G. It seems immediately natural to move in this environment.
A quick adaptation to 1/6G.
Tranquility, we copy, over.
They're now feeling 1/6 the force of gravity of Earth.
Armstrong reporting there, no difficulty adapting to the 1/6 gravity of the moon.
Window is a relatively level plane cratered with a fairly large number of craters of the 5 to 50 foot variety, and some ridges, small 20, 30 feet high, I would guess, and literally thousands of little 1 and 2 foot craters around the area. We see some angular blocks out several hundred feet in front of us that are probably 2 feet in size and have angular edges. There is a hill in view just about on the ground track ahead of us. Difficult to estimate, but might be a half a mile or a mile.
Roger, tranquility, we copy, over.
Neil Armstrong describing what he can see out the window of the lunar module.
Sounds like it looks a lot better than it did yesterday at that very low sun angle. It looked rough as a cob then.
My God.
Well, it really was rough, Mike, over the targeted landing area. It was extremely rough, cratered, and large numbers of rocks that were probably some... many larger than 5 or 10 feet in size.
Many of these craters and rocks larger than 5 or 10 feet
when
in size.
When in doubt, land long.
That's a good bit of advice from Mike. When in doubt, land long. Go
so we
on
did.
Past the rocks. All Armstrong chimes in, that's what we did. No difficulty adapting to 1/6 gravity, 1/6 of the gravity of the Earth there on the moon. It feels good to them. They saw some fairly large 5 to 50 foot craters. Some
Tranquility, Houston, after you get through this T-57, we'd like an e-memory dump, over.
Roger, after this first T-57, you want an e-memory dump.
That's affirmative.
That's Aldrin saying after going through this program.
Columbia, Houston, we have a P-22 update for you if you're ready to copy, over.
Conversations between Mission Control Center on Earth.
At your service, sir.
And the
right,
moon.
Right, Mike. T1-104-3218. T2-104-3728. And that is.
This is Charlie Duke in Mission Control Center on Earth talking to Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong on the moon. We should hear their response.
Roger, understand. Based on a targeted landing site, T1-104-3218, T2-104-3728, and 4 miles south.
That was Mike Collins responding there. That instruction to Mike Collins in lunar orbit.
They landed left or right of center line, just a little bit long. Is that all we know?
Apparently, that's about all we can tell. Over.
Okay, thank you.
That information for Mike Collins' benefit in order to know where the lunar module is below him as he orbits the moon, 110 kilometers above the surface, 110 to 111, and he's still within signal range. He should go out of signal range in about 19 minutes from now. The lunar module, Eagle, with Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong inside, safely on the surface of the moon, and the command module about to go on around the moon during its first revolution without them. You heard Neil Armstrong say that they had no difficulty adapting to the 1/6 gravity.
Tranquility, Houston.
And Houston, our mission timer is now reached.
That was
902-34-47 in static.
Roger, copy. Your mission timer is now static. Get say again the time.
902-34-47.
That's Armstrong on the surface of the moon talking to Charlie Duke on Earth.
Roger, copy, Tranquility. That gravity aligned looked a good to us. We see you recycling.
Gravity aligned looked good to us. We see you recycling, says Charlie Duke on Earth.
Well, no, I was trying to get time 1665 out, and somehow it proceeded on to the 622 before I could do a VERP 32 enter. I want to log a time here, and then I'd like to know whether you want me to proceed on the torquing angles or to go back and re-enter again before torquing, over.
That's
right,
Aldrin.
Stand by.
That's Aldrin on the surface of the moon talking to the Earth. Armstrong reported seeing some large 20 to 30 foot some large rocks, several meters in diameter, some ridges 20 to 30 feet high, thousands of 1 to 2 foot craters, and some angular blocks of stone-like material about 2 feet in circumference or in diameter, and a number of fairly large 5 to 50 foot craters in the area. He also said that the men here in Mission Control who said that they wouldn't be able to tell where they were when they landed were winners today, because he and Buzz Aldrin were so busy during the final moments of descent and touchdown, also busy during that necessary maneuvering to a smooth spot, that he could not tell exactly where he was.
Tranquility, Houston, we'd like you to recall P-57 and run through the gravity line one more time, over.
Roger, I concur with that.
And Roger, Tranquility, for the emission timer, two suggestions. Check the circuit breaker, pin 11. Also, reset and attempt to start. That 9 in the first digit might have something to do with it, over.
Conversations between the Earth and the Moon.
Okay, we've tried both of those. If circuit breaker is in, when I reset put it in reset, I get 902-0440. When I release it, now I get 902-0449. I'm going to cycle the circuit breaker.
Roger.
Neil Armstrong reporting that circuit breaker.
I cycled circuit breaker and got all 9s. And it will not now reset from all 9s.
Roger.
They like to see all 9s come up on the display, on what's called the DISCI display keyboard. He recycled a circuit breaker there, reporting what he's doing.
Tranquility, Houston, we'll research this problem and be back with you momentarily on the mission event time, correction, the mission timer.
The touchdown point is in the western part of the Sea of Tranquility, just barely above the lunar equator at approximately 24 degrees east longitude. Armstrong had very detailed maps of the lunar surface taken by the lunar orbiter photographer and also by Apollos 8 and 10, and they received extensive training on what the surface should look like right in the touchdown spot, so they fully expected to know where they were and what part of that touchdown spot they would be when they landed. But as you heard Armstrong report, they were so busy during the landing phase maneuvering out of the way of craters and rocks, they couldn't see exactly where they touched down.
I'd say the color of the...
This is Armstrong.
The local surface is... very comparable to that we observe from orbit at this sun angle, about 10 degrees sun angle or that nature. It's pretty much without color. It's gray and it's very white, chalky gray as you look into the zero phase line, and it's considerably darker gray. More like a ashen gray as you look out 90 degrees to the sun. The some of the surface rocks in close here that have been fractured or disturbed by the rocket engine plume are coated with this light gray on the outside, but where they've been broken, they display a dark, very dark gray interior, and it looks like it could be country basalt.
Roger.
Neil
Tranquility, we see the now 93. Perp 34.
Roger, I assume you wanted it. Roger.
You heard Armstrong describing again what the surface coloring looked like. He said it seemed to be a rather light gray on the zero phase line, meaning right down the line of sunlight looking away from the sun. If you look around at 90 degrees to the sun at right angles to the angle of the sun coming in,
Tranquility,
the
Houston,
shades of gray darken.
Fuel and ox again over, it's building back up.
Shades darken 90 degrees to the sun line.
Okay, ox going now.
The right under the touchdown point where the engine plume stirred up debris.
Tranquility, Houston, you can open both fuel and ox vent now. Over.
An instruction to open.
Okay.
Open fuel and ox vent.
Houston, Tranquility, standing by for a go on ag to ping the line and a lunar line. Over.
That's Aldrin asking for a go on ags to pings and another type of alignment procedure. You're listening to this.
Tranquility, Houston, you are a go for the ags to pings line and then the lunar line. Over.
This conversation between the Earth and the Moon coming to you through the Voice of America. The Voice of America picking up from Houston, Texas, Washington, D.C., relaying conversations between the Earth and the Moon. You heard Neil Armstrong say that it looked like the material was very much like...
Tranquility, Houston, please vent the fuel. It's increasing rapidly. Over.
Please vent the fuel. The pressures are increasing rapidly. This instruction from Mission Control.
We show 30 PSI in the fuel and 30 in the oxidizer.
Roger. We're reading somewhat different than that. Stand by.
Problem on fuel pressurization.
The fuel temperature is reading 64 and in the descent and the oxidizer at descent 2, and the oxidizer is off scale low. Descent 1 is showing 61 in the fuel and 65 in the oxidizer.
Roger, stand by.
Temperature and pressure readings from onboard the spacecraft seeming to differ from those being read in mission control through telemetry data coming back on the unified S-band system.
Tranquility, Houston, please take the fuel vent switch and hold it open. Over.
Okay.
Take the fuel vent switch.
We're holding it open. Indicating about 24 PSI on board.
Roger.
Now indicating 24 pounds per square inch of fuel pressure. These pressures must be kept within certain limits. Differing readings between the lunar module on the surface of the moon and mission control here on Earth. Neil Armstrong reported the surface looked like basalt.
Now indicating 20 PSI in the fuel side.
Roger.
And 22 in the ox.
Roger.
Pressures coming down, onboard readings much lower apparently than those being received on Earth. Of course, if fuel pressures develop too high, that would endanger the mission. All the engineers in mission control and the space pilots on the surface of the moon performing together very coolly with complete rapport and understanding of what they're doing and the importance of it. Lunar module.
Now indicating 15 PSI in both tanks.
Roger.
Both of the fuel pressures there, both in the oxidizer and fuel tanks, have been reduced 50% from what they originally read on board the spacecraft. They, according to Neil Armstrong, they were reading 30 pounds per square inch, and according to the onboard readings, all of the tanks are now reduced to 15 pounds per square inch.
Tranquility, Houston, if you haven't done so, you can release the fuel vent switch now. Over.
Now they can release the switch the vent switch and let the pressure maintain where it is. Mission Control Center in Houston, more sure of its telemetry data than they seem to have more confidence in the data coming back to the Earth through telemetry than on the onboard readings on the spacecraft. They have just ordered Armstrong and Aldrin to vent the fuel and oxidizer tanks on board the spacecraft to 50% of the readings observed on board, from 30 down to 15 pounds per square inch. Bill Land, with us there in our Washington studio, can you comment on the significance of this tank pressurization and its being reduced?
Well, Rhett, evidently they saw some indications of a rising pressure which on the ground from telemetry, which could endanger the tank. That is, the could overpressurize the tank. So they, as a safety measure, asked them to vent that tank and release the pressure. However, on board, they didn't get such a high indication, but this is just a safety precaution, and they don't need the descent engine any longer anyhow, so this is the proper thing to do.
We have indication that we've frozen up the descent fuel helium heat exchanger, and with some fuel trapped in the line between air and the valves, and the pressure we're looking at is increasing there. Over.
Here's another indication of some pressure going up.
Roger, understand.
Freezing of a fuel line. That on board the spacecraft in a helium pressurization line. This was explained by the Earth, by Charlie Duke, to Armstrong and Aldrin in the lunar module in Eagle on the surface of the moon in the Sea of Tranquility. The landing accomplished with expertise, as the astronauts reported, it was easier than in the simulator. Armstrong had to maneuver for about an extra minute beyond the expected touchdown time in order to find a smooth spot because of a large crater that's about 100 meters in diameter and because of large rocks and boulders strewn all over the place.
That touchdown time, 20 hours, 18 minutes, and 42 seconds, Greenwich Mean Time. We had an earlier problem, too, on the mission timer.
Base, Houston, if you have not done so, please close both fuel and ox vents now. Over.
Request from Mission Control to close
you,
both
sir.
Fuel and oxidizer vents. They are closed, said the spacecraft on the moon. Thank you, said the Earth.
From the surface, we could not see any stars out the window, but out my overhead hatch, I'm looking at the Earth. It's big and bright, beautiful. I was going to give a try at seeing some stars through the optics.
Looking at the Earth out the overhead window.
We understand, must be a beautiful sight, over.
Neil Armstrong looking out his overhead window. He says he can't see any stars, but we're looking at the Earth, and it's big and bright and beautiful.
Has there been any further mention of the mission timer problem?
The only mention I heard of a mission timer was Buzz Aldrin saying that, giving a confirmation of what his timer was reading. I did not hear about a problem with it.
Well, perhaps we misunderstood it here in Washington, the communications.
I heard him giving coordinating his reading on this timer with Mission Control Center back here on Earth.
We would like to point out that the fuel pressure problem that has been called to the attention of the crew is in the descent system. It is apparently downstream of the tanks, where a small amount of fluid has been trapped in a line, and we don't expect it to cause any problem. The line should be able to take far more pressure than the fluid would exert in the event that there was an overpressurization. We would expect that the line would spring a small leak. The pressure would drop rapidly. Again, I would point out that we do not see this as a significant problem.
It seems almost incredible that we're hearing very routine, matter-of-fact conversations between the Earth and the Moon, what we now call Tranquility Base, the lunar landing module on the surface of the Moon. They've been there now almost
Columbia, Houston,
50 minutes.
LOS, you're looking great, going over the hill, over.
Mike Collins, very quiet in Columbia, listening to all of this conversation. No response from him now as he's about
okay,
to...
Okay, thank you. Glad to hear that this is looking good. Do you have a suggested attitude for me? This one here seems all right.
Stand by.
That was Mike Collins in the command module about
let
to...
Let me know when it's lunchtime, will you?
Say again?
He said, let me know when it's lunchtime, I think.
Disregard.
Columbia, Houston, you got a good attitude right there.
His attitude
okay,
looks good. That means when he comes back around the surface of the Moon on the east side, he should be pointed in a good direction for communication with Earth. And he facetiously said, let me know when it's lunchtime, will you? Charlie Duke didn't understand him, and he said, well, disregard it. 50 seconds until the command module goes around behind the Moon, leaving the lunar module Eagle alone there in the Sea of Tranquility. Astronauts Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin going about their work as pilots, going through the laborious and long process of getting the systems all in order for a stay of some 22 hours.
And we've already had a brief description of what they can see outside the lunar module. Those varying shades of gray, the dark gray of the rocks that were disturbed by the rocket engine, and the hill that they see about a half mile away in view.
Some ridges stretching 20 to 30 feet into the air, thousands and thousands of 1 to 2 foot craters, angular blocks about a half a meter in diameter, many very large craters, at least large to them sitting there on the surface, of up to some 50 feet in diameter.
We have our own resident expert on the lunar surface who's been sitting here with us.
Here's Apollo Control.
From the command module, of course, we'll maintain constant communications with the lunar module on the lunar surface. We have some heart rates for Neil Armstrong during that powered descent to the lunar surface. At the time the burn was initiated, Armstrong's heart rate was 110. At touchdown on the lunar surface, he had a heart rate of 156 beats per minute. And the flight surgeon reports that his heart rate is now in the 90s, and we do not have biomedical data on Buzz Aldrin.
So Neil Armstrong,
his heart was
very
beating.
Understandably, was somewhat excited there during that final phase of the powered descent. Heart rates going up to 156 beats per minute. Here's Doug Ward. I thought he was about to cut in again.
I think all of our heart rates here on Earth had speeded up at that point too, right?
I think mine's still fairly high at this point. It's almost hard to believe that we're there, that it's been accomplished, that man is now sitting on the surface of the Moon after this 8-year program to land men on the Moon in this decade, job half done, now they must return home.
But before that first step out onto the surface of the Moon by a man. I think Bill Land, one of our colleagues here from NASA, made a very apt comment while we were listening to that landing, and that is that an entire new world has opened up just in those few seconds when that probe touched the surface of the Moon and the spacecraft settled down on the surface. And just those first, those first descriptions by Neil Armstrong and by Buzz Aldrin of what they're seeing, these colors that they see, may change our whole system of geology so far as the Moon is concerned. Don Beatty, who's sitting here with us while we're waiting for further communications, can you position the spacecraft somewhat? You've been examining your maps of the lunar surface and that three-dimensional mock-up that we have here.
Well, it'll be a little bit difficult and perhaps premature to try and position them at this time. They said they landed a little bit long, and as I recall, they were drifting a little right just before touchdown. We see here on the model that there are a number of craters that could be what Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin were describing. Ones that are relatively fresh with a lot of boulders around them. I think we'll have to wait a little bit longer before we can tell for sure where they are.
Were you surprised when Neil Armstrong reported back that the target area was extremely rough, that it was cratered, and caused him to have to hover at least 1 minute longer?
I was a little bit surprised. As you know, the Surveyor 5 is about 12 nautical miles out to the northwest.
Go right ahead.
And the pictures that we had from Surveyor 5 show that there were a number of blocks near the landing site, but I guess at this time what you could say is that Surveyor 5 did not land as near a crater which had thrown out a lot of blocks, and therefore we didn't see that the landing site there was quite as blocky as Neil and Buzz described to us.
Well, Don, you heard the description, too, of the rocks and the ridges around them, the colors and all. Does this follow what you expected?
I think so. I didn't hear any thing really unusual in so far as the colors went. There have been a number of interesting things, which I'm sure that the scientists in the science support rooms at Mission Control Center have been listening to very eagerly. One of the first things of interest was the fact that Buzz Aldrin described that he was getting some dust when they were still 30 feet above the surface. We have a sequence camera, a movie camera on board, which was...
Here is Apollo Mission Control.
We have an update on that touchdown time on the lunar surface. This still is not the final official time, which we'll get from a readout of data. But the refined time is 102 hours, 45 minutes, 40 seconds, which would have been 12 minutes, 36 seconds after initiating the powered descent. That was 102 hours, 45 minutes, 40 seconds for touchdown. Total time of powered descent, 12 minutes, 36 seconds. And we would expect those numbers to change perhaps a little bit when we get final data readout.
There we have an update from Apollo Mission Control on the touchdown time. 102 hours, 45 minutes, and 40 seconds into the flight of Apollo 11. A flight that began on July 16th at 13 hours, 32 Greenwich Mean Time. About 4.5 days ago. And here we are on the surface of the moon. Merle Waugh, you had a comment.
Yeah, I was going to say, they managed to pinpoint the time of touchdown, but along the lines of what Don B. was saying, apparently we're going to have to find the landing location not by the astronauts telling us where they are, but by computing from Earth. And until they do that, they might be coming.
I think we have another call up to Tranquility Base to the astronauts, the air to ground, or I should say the moon to Earth communications now. No, apparently not.
Well, I think, Merrill, that you have to realize that was just a quick look out the window, that perhaps as both Buzz and Neil look out both windows, we may be able to get a few more landmarks that they can see. And with the detailed maps that we have, perhaps we can help them locate themselves.
Well, can't you do this too by the radio signals between the spacecraft and the Earth?
Houston, I'm counting down to T3 time. If you'd like to give me a hack, we can set up an event timer, over.
More communications from the ground, Houston, to Tranquility Base. That is the...
Okay, how about counting up?
The lunar module.
Roger, you want it counting up? Stand by.
Further checks between Houston on the ground and the spacecraft Eagle, sitting at about a 4-degree angle, a 4.5-degree angle, perched on the surface of the moon, in the Sea of Tranquility. You'll hear that term used very often now in communications. As long as they're on the moon, a Tranquility Base. So when you hear that, of course, that means the lunar module, the lunar craft, landing craft, Eagle, with astronauts Aldrin and Armstrong aboard, the first men to land on the moon. We have reached a goal that was set some 8 years ago by the late President Kennedy, and now has been reached with the landing at about 20 hours, 18 minutes, and 42 seconds.
Tranquility, Houston on my mark, 6230. Mark 6230 from past PDI.
More communications between the capsule communicator.
What we're looking for, Charlie, is time counting up to T2 that'll be equal to 60 minutes, or at T3 be equal to 60 minutes at T3.
Roger, we'll have it for you.
That was Neil Armstrong talking to the capsule communicator in Houston. Well, gentlemen, there will be several go, no-go decisions at this point, will there not? Bill Land, as to each increment of time that they stay on the surface of the moon?
That's right, Bill. There'll be several go-no-go decisions. However, these are not major ones.
Houston, reset the event timer to zero, and on my mark at 103:39:41, we'll give you a hack, and it'll be 1 hour over.
The major decision to stay... Okay.
We got about almost 3 minutes to go, Neil, over.
Okay.
They're yet to receive a go, which will come shortly, on the total lunar stay. However, in real time, as systems are monitored throughout their stay, there's a continual updating of information and always return to orbit could be ordered by the ground if conditions so warranted. However, once they pass this last critical go for the total lunar stay, they will then get another major go for the EVA, which will occur later today.
At the moment, I assume that the spacecraft is prepared for immediate ascent if this were necessary. Wasn't this one of the first actions that they took upon landing, Merle Wall?
Yes, that's right. And once this next go is given for staying on the surface, is right with regard to the lunar module systems, there's really not much point in, for example, going in back into orbit prematurely. You might as well solve your problems right while you're sitting solidly on the surface. The next important phase, though, will be to check out all the systems that are going to have to be used that have not been used, like systems that will be used out on the lunar surface.
I suppose we might review again for our listeners the fact that the spacecraft, the lunar landing craft Eagle, has landed on the moon. It's been just about 52 or 3 minutes ago when they touched down. Slightly west of the target area, because as Neil Armstrong reported, they found a very large crater nearby, the size of a football field, large boulders. And so they burned that descent engine an extra minute, moving it to a different location, apparently landing at a very good location, because the angle of the spacecraft is tipped only about 4.5 degrees. I think the first words were from Armstrong is that Eagle has landed. And Buzz Aldrin, the lunar module pilot, said a very smooth touchdown. Then, of course, we got, after the touchdown, we had some descriptions from the astronauts. They looked out the window. They said that they could see quite a number of craters up to about 50 feet in diameter, that there were thousands of little craters, 3, 4, 5 feet in diameter, all around them, that they were large angular blocks about 2 feet across. And I believe it was Buzz Aldrin who said that he could see a hill, what looked like a hill, about half a mile away. And Neil Armstrong went on to describe some of the colors. He said that they were different shades of gray, in some areas pretty much without color. Away from the sun, you're about 90 degrees away from the sun, the color seemed a darker gray. He said that the rocks immediately around them that had been disturbed by the rocket engine, some of them broken, they seemed a light gray on top, but at the on the broken parts of the rocks, you saw a quite darker gray color. And then looking back at the Earth, I've forgotten whether it was Armstrong or Aldrin, he said, looking at the Earth, it looks big, bright, and beautiful. Norm?
Don Beatty, inasmuch as landing site 2 probably represents the best landing area, and it was a little rougher than you anticipated, does this indicate that perhaps the other landing sites might be much rougher?
Not necessarily. This was one of the smoother landing sites based on the photography that we had, but you must remember that the resolution of the photography that we received from Lunar Orbiter had only about a meter or so resolution. So rocks of the size that Neil and Buzz have been describing were just about on the limits of resolution. And I think our better data came from the surveyors themselves, which had, of course, much better resolution and indicated that even though there were many rocks, there were lots of smooth places in between them. Now, what the other landing sites will be like, we'll just have to wait and see, I suppose. We do know, though, that, for instance, landing site 3 appears to be quite a bit rougher than either the ones on the eastern side or the western side.
In future flights, do you hope to make landings in some of these rougher areas?
Very definitely. We hope to, in the future, be able to land in very rough sites. And we have been looking, of course, at a number of these areas and trying to decide whether they are too rough to land in or whether we may, in the future, have a hope of landing near them.
I wonder, Don, if you could, for our listeners, locate once again the position of the spacecraft as it sits on the moon. If they're looking at a lunar map here, we'll pull that map out in front of us. The landing site number 2 is at about 24 degrees east and almost on the zero meridian, the zero or equator of the moon. And would you say that this is at the far western end of the landing zone?
Perhaps it is at the western part of the ellipse. The ellipse is about 10 miles in length. It's more or less cigar shaped, about 10 miles in length and about 3 miles wide. And for those who may have lunar maps available, it's about 15 miles, nautical miles, slightly west of north of the small crater Mulkey.
And sitting, of course, right in the center of the what we call the Sea of Tranquility. On these maps that were printed before a lunar landing, it looks very smooth, but apparently it isn't quite as smooth as we thought, at least not at the target area. And I'm certain during this stay on the moon, if they get a go for the 22 hours or so on the moon, we'll be hearing a great many detailed descriptions of this particular area. We have been on the moon now some 58 minutes and 20 seconds, looking at our lunar time clock. In the mission of Apollo 11, we're 103 hours and 44 minutes since launch last Wednesday, July 16th, at 13 hours 32 Greenwich Mean Time.
From Dr. Thomas Paine, NASA Administrator in the Building 1 Auditorium at 4:30.
Apollo Mission Control.
We also have some updated information on the landing point. It appears that the spacecraft Eagle touched down at 0.799 degrees north, or just about on the lunar equator, and 23.46 degrees east longitude. which would have put it about 4 miles from the targeted landing point downrange. We're now 54 minutes, or rather 27 minutes from reacquisition of the command module, and of course we're in constant contact with the lunar module on the surface. At this point, all LEM systems continue to look very good.
That was Doug Ward in Mission Control giving us this updated information on the actual landing spot of the spacecraft at 23.46 degrees east longitude and 0.79 degrees north, meaning just a little less than 1 degree north. That's just a little bit to the right and just a little bit of about a half a degree downrange, as he said, about 4 nautical miles from the targeted touchdown point. This footpad is some 2 miles wide, 4 miles wide by about 8 miles long. I still don't know if this means they were inside or slightly outside of this projected target area. You gentlemen looking at the three-dimensional model, does this give you any more information from which to deduce this exact point?
We're looking at that right now. The ellipse, an older ellipse that we have, it is further west than this three-dimensional map. We're looking at another one here, another map. Don Beattie, can you give us a reading on that now?
Well, the ellipse that we had here on our 3D model was one of the original ellipses, which was only 5 by 8 kilometers, and that has subsequently been enlarged for the landing. And unfortunately, the landing site is apparently just off the ellipse that we have. But it looks very good, and there are a number of very nice fresh craters that show here on the map that has been made up.
So that when the two astronauts do step outside onto the surface of the moon, they're going to...
Tranquility, Houston, we see the star angle difference. Looks good.
More communications. Well, they'll have interesting...
Okay, that last star was Navi, and it was too well distinguishable. I can see where that error could come in. I think for the gravity alignment with one star, it, Roger will be quite good.
Roger, stand by on the 993.
That was Buzz Aldrin talking to Charlie Duke again there on some alignments and some information for the computer. According to my guess here, or estimation as to where in the vicinity of this ellipse they may have landed, it would be on the...
Hello, Tranquility Base, Houston. We'd like you to torque that, over.
Again, torque the inertial measurement unit a bit. Portions of it. It would look to me as though this landing spot would be in the, if you're looking downrange or to the west, it would be in the northwest portion of this ellipse, right on the edge. It would be very close to the edge if it were truly at 79.79 degrees north and 23.46 degrees east longitude. That would be right very close to the edge of that ellipse. In fact, on one photograph here I have, which is not a map at all, it is a photograph, shows a large crater there.
Don Beattie, he's looking also at these photographic maps.
Yes, I agree. I think that's where the location would place it at this time. I'm sure that there'll be further updates of that location later on in the mission.
Very near the crater called North Corner in one of our photographs.
Houston, this is Tranquility. Do you want us to accept this position? Over.
Tranquility, Houston, we're looking at it. Stand by. We'd like you to pull the circuit breaker on panel 11 for the mission timer. Over.
Roger, I've already done that, Charlie.
Okay.
As Bill McCrory mentioned earlier, there was obviously some problem there with the mission timer in getting it started precisely at the point of touchdown. They had to realign it and reset it, and I'm just from that last remark, I'm not so sure they have it counting exactly right now. It is a reference for the astronauts on board the spacecraft, though, and I'm sure there's nothing to worry about there, because as long as the Earth can continue to communicate and give them timing on events, then we're all to the good.
Well, Bill Land did mention a bit earlier that it was an important piece of equipment, though, for the various countdowns.
Tranquility, Houston, we'd like you to reject that RLS, over. Roger.
Oh, absolutely. Time clocks and very
accurate. Tranquility Base, Houston, we'd like you to call after this, call Prue and give us a e-memory dump.
I would certainly assume that any accurate timing device is of great importance. My point is that I think that it's something that can, on which they can receive assistance from the Earth.
That's right, Rhett, and they will be updating that thing, and I'm sure they've got plenty of time to solve whatever problem they might have with the timer.
It's sort of like your watch or my watch running down. We wind it up and reset it. A little more complicated than that, however.
We're still studying our photographic maps here, trying to get a more precise idea of the exact location of the spacecraft given a short time ago.
Here comes the memory dump.
That's Aldrin.
Roger.
You'll notice every time that Neil Armstrong or Buzz Aldrin keys his microphone and speaks to us, if the signal is very good, wherever you may be listening there in all parts of the world.
There, we got 1106.
You can hear
Roger.
You can hear a slight whine in the background. This lunar module has got lots of fans and noises inside it. And when it's when the thrusters are firing or blipping away, when the fans are running, when the systems are all actuated, Tom Stafford has observed that it's a real noisemaker.
Rhett Turner, we'll break away from you for a few minutes now to replay the very dramatic moment
of
the landing on the moon. This happened, of course, at 20 hours, 18 minutes, Greenwich Mean Time, on Sunday, July 20th. Here is the conversation between Eagle, the lunar module, and Mission Control in Houston from the time that the landing craft was some 4,200 feet above the lunar surface.
Altitude 4,200.
Houston, you're a go for landing, over.
Roger, understand. Go for landing. 3,000 feet. Sound alarm. 1201.
1201. Roger, 1201 alarm. We're go. Same type. We're go.
2,000 feet. 2,000 feet. Into the ag. 47 degrees.
Roger.
47 degrees.
Eagle looking great. Your go.
Altitude 1,600. 1,400 feet. Still looking very good.
Roger, 1202. We copy it.
35 degrees. 35 degrees. 750. Coming down to 23. 700 feet. 21 down. 33 degrees. 100 feet down at 19. 540 feet down at 30 and at 15. 400 feet down at 9. Gate forward. 150 feet down at 4. 30 and a half down. 300 velocity. 300 feet down 3.5. 47 forward. Put up. On 1.5 down. 70. 8. Got the shadow out there. 50 down at 2.5. 19 forward. Altitude, velocity, light. 3.5 down. 220 feet. 13 forward. 11 forward, coming down nicely. 200 feet. 4.5 down. 5.5 down. 160 feet. 6.5 down. 5.5 down. Behind forward. Good. Turn 20 feet. 100 feet, 3.5 down, 9 forward. 5%. 185. 75 feet. Car's looking good, down a half. 6 forward. 60 seconds. Lights on. 6. Down 2.5. Forward. Forward. 40 feet down, 2.5. Picking up some dust. 30 feet, 2.5 down. Great shadow. 4 forward. 4 forward, drifting to the right a little. 20, down a half. 30 seconds. Forward, just. Contact light. Okay, engine stop. ACA at a descent. Mode control, both auto, descent engine command override off. Engine arm off. 413 is in.
We copy you down, Eagle.
Listen, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
And that was it. The descent of Eagle, the U.S. lunar module, as it landed on the moon earlier today. In fact, 1 hour and 11 minutes ago, at 20 hours 18 Greenwich Mean Time, man's first landing on the surface of the moon. And this is the Voice of America, broadcasting throughout the world with live coverage of the lunar landing mission of Apollo 11. Now on the moon, repeating once again, 1 hour, 11 minutes, and 25 seconds. We are some 103 hours and 57 minutes into the total mission, a mission that began on Wednesday, July 16th, at 13 hours 32 Greenwich Mean Time. Very soon we should have a go-no-go decision for remaining on the surface of the moon the full 21 to 22 hours. There are very clear communications at the present time between Earth, the mission control in Houston, and what we now call Tranquility Base, that is the lunar landing craft on the surface of the moon. For those who may have lunar maps, the Tranquility Base, or Eagle, is now at 0.799 degrees north by 23.46 degrees east. It's about 4 miles west of the originally targeted area. This is the Voice of America, broadcasting from Washington. Now, from the Voice of America's newsroom, a summary of late world news.
Man is on the moon. The American astronauts Neil Armstrong and Edwin Aldrin set their landing craft Eagle gently down on the lunar surface at 20 hours, 18 minutes Greenwich Mean Time. Command pilot Armstrong said, "Contact light on, engine off, the Eagle has landed." The moon landing team's first scheduled move is to inspect the landing craft to be sure it was not damaged in the descent and touchdown, and that it is ready for the return flight to the mothership, the Columbia, which continues in orbit around the moon, piloted by astronaut Michael Collins. Astronaut Aldrin, reporting on the appearance of the moon surface, said, "It looks like a collection of just about every variety of shapes, angularities, granularities, just about every variety of rocks you can find." The Soviet Union has announced that its spacecraft Luna 15 has moved into a new orbit, taking the ship to within 16 kilometers of the moon's surface. Earlier, the Jodrell Bank Observatory in Britain had noted the change in Luna's orbit. Spokesman at the observatory said the new path brought Luna somewhat closer to the orbit of Apollo 11. Egyptian and Israeli planes crossed the ceasefire line this afternoon to bombard each other's missile and gun positions and radar stations on the two sides of the Suez Canal. Egypt says 17 Israeli planes have been downed in aerial dogfights and by ground fire along various sectors of the waterway. Israel reports 5 Egyptian planes shot down and the loss of 2 of its own. Israel says the heavy ground fighting in the Suez Canal area tapered off late today. There is no word from the Egyptian side. Today's major Suez Canal fighting followed a pre-dawn Israeli landing raid on the Egyptian fortified island of Qadra in the northern Gulf of Suez. Both sides claimed they inflicted heavy casualties on the other. Israel said 6 of its men were killed in the hand-to-hand engagement. Egypt said it lost 6 men killed or wounded. General Earl Wheeler, chairman of the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff, left Saigon Sunday after a 4-day assessment of the situation in South Vietnam. He told reporters he saw no political meaning in the current scaled-down level of enemy attacks. General Wheeler said enemy infiltration, although comparatively less than last year, is continuing, and he noted that communist combat activity has always occurred in cycles. General Wheeler declined to discuss future U.S. troop withdrawals, but said the South Vietnamese armed forces were making progress in increasing their combat capability. In the war, government troops reported capturing 15 tons of ammunition at communist supply points near the western sector of the demilitarized zone. Enemy gunners shelled the Bien Hoa Air Base north of Saigon, causing light damage and casualties, and sent 2 rockets into the capital. It was the 4th attack against Saigon this month. Rome dispatches say Italy's breakaway Unitarian Socialists today reiterated their refusal to join a new coalition government unless they receive guarantees there will be no cooperation with the communists. Last night, the Christian Democrats reportedly said they would not accept any solution except a new coalition in which both socialist parties take part.